I want you to imagine for a moment that you knew the most incredible old man. And I mean, this guy is old. He's like older than Mark Roberts old. He's incredible for a lot of interesting reasons. One is, this old guy knows everything. He remembers everything he ever studied. He studied world history, other cultures, religion, science. He can figure out things, has one of those amazing engineering minds. He's like a walking encyclopedia of knowledge. He is an incredible old man. Also, the guy's been everywhere. He's been on all seven continents. He's climbed to the top of Mount Everest twice. He has a fish named after him for one trip he had to the bottom of the ocean. This guy went to the moon to get dust for his grandkid's sandbox. Not really, but he's been everywhere, this guy. He's just such an incredible character. And he's able to do this because this old man is wealthy. I mean, this guy has the means to purchase anything he pleases. He was already wealthy when he retired in the 80s, and then he poured it all into this little thing called Apple stock. He's doing well. So he's owned islands and houses and cars and G6s and all that stuff. On the night that he died, that old man sat down at his desk and pulled out some paper. And he wrote a 12-page letter. And when he was finished, he folded the letter twice like that, and he wrote four words on it, put it into an envelope, and mailed it to you. By the time you receive the envelope, the man has died. The whole world knew him, and the whole world is mourning. And a day or two later, you receive this letter from who is, forget the commercials, the legitimate, most interesting man in the world. You open it slowly, and there are those four words, the meaning of life. And you realize you have something incredible in your hands. You don't want anybody else to know about it, so you go find a nice, quiet place to open it up. You can't believe that the man who knew everything, had been everywhere, and had all things is about to tell you how to live your best life now. And you open up to page one, and you read the first line, and it says, "Life has no meaning." A confusing beginning, but then you remember that he was also like the funniest guy in the world too, so you're pretty sure he's kidding. So you read on to the next line and he says, "No, seriously, there is no value in your life on this earth. It ultimately amounts to nothing." And it hits you, this guy's not kidding. And so you read through the first 10 pages, it's a 12-page letter, and through the first 10 pages he tells you some really cool stuff. He tells you about places that he'd been and things that he had done, but at the end of every section he said, "But let me just remind you, it didn't matter. Life is unfair and it doesn't always work out like it should. Bad guys win, good guys lose, it's unpredictable, and in the end, as was referenced a few moments ago, I'm dead and you will be too." Well, thanks for that. So you're about 10 pages in and you're ready to just give up. But then, since you've come that far, you decide to read those last two pages. And he says, "I will not apologize for anything I said up to this point in this letter, but I'll tell you this. If you will remember four simple things, just four, then even with all of those uncertainties being the reality of your life, you will live a great life for however much of it you have left." So you read that letter, those last four pages, those last two pages, and you memorize those last four things. You fold that letter up and put it away, and you go out and you live an amazing, fulfilling, and happy life. Now, I made all that up. But if that were true, would you be interested to know what a man who'd seen and knew it all had to say is the four things that can bring joy even to a place like this? I hope the answer is yes, because our study this afternoon is about just such a guy. His name was Solomon. Solomon had wisdom granted to him from God. He was the wisest man on all the earth. He had gone wherever he wanted to go, probably not to the top of Mount Everest, but basically because it was boring to him. He did everything he wanted to do. He had riches in the, some say, trillions of dollars in terms of what gold and fine jewels are worth. And during the last stages of his life, he wrote a 12-chapter letter. Do you know which letter we're talking about? I need everybody in the room this afternoon to open your Bibles to the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is his last effort to tell you the meaning of life so that all that would live after him might be able to make something out of it. And that brings us to Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 1 and 2. What will this great man tell us? And there it is. The words of the preacher, Ecclesiastes 1, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Translation, life has no meaning. Not in and of itself. It's empty, it's futile, it's passing, and it's vain. He says in verse 3, what advantage does man have in all the work which he does under the sun? But he's already answered that. What's the answer? There isn't any. There's nothing guaranteed by all that you do. There's nothing entitled to you that you will get. It doesn't always work out like it should for those who work hard. And then he kind of goes through this list in chapter 1 and verse 4. A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. Just sort of cycles on through. Verse 9, that which has been is that which will be, and that which has been done is that which will be done. So there's nothing new under the sun. It's like, you're not special. Because as soon as you're gone, someone else will sit in this pew a generation from now. It just rolls on through. In chapter 2, he said, now listen, I'm the guy to tell you this because I had knowledge and power and riches and I tried everything. If there is really some magic thing you can endeavor on this earth to make it better than everybody else's life, I would have found it. Look in verse 9. Then I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. All that my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart was pleased because of all my labor. And this was my reward for all my labor. Thus, verse 11, I considered all my activities which my hands had done, and labor which I had exerted, and behold, all was vanity, and striving after the wind, and there was no profit under the sun. And then just for fun, he throws in chapter 4, verse 2. So I congratulate the dead who are already dead more than the living who are still living. Why am I reading this? Why would I want to delve into the guy who I thought was going to give me the great secrets of life? And he said, the dead are better off than you. Better to be dead than to live a life that you can't count on with complete unpredictability and unreliability and where the bad guys win. That's the letter we have here in the Ecclesiastes letter. But then, goes for 10 chapters like that. When you're just about to give up and say, I think I'll just wing it. You get to chapters 11 and 12. This is that last two pages, those last two pages of the man's letter. I will give you four things. And if you can remember these four things and embrace them and apply them in the days of your youth, I can't take away anything I told you for 10 chapters. I can't make better or make certain the things that aren't good and aren't guaranteed. But I'm here to tell you, you can find a way to live a great life anyway. That's chapters 11 and 12, and there are four things there we're going to look at for the next few minutes. Before we delve into those four final thoughts for today, I need to say two or three things. First of all, let me say thank you for the opportunity to be here. I appreciate very much the shepherds of this good group. They want to see these sheep grow, and so they set aside weekends like this, and they allow guys like me and these other gentlemen to come and to speak, and I consider that a tremendous responsibility and also a tremendous honor, and it's my second time to be here, and it means a lot, and I want to thank you for that. Thankful to Mark for all of his great work to help all this come together, and for the other gentlemen and their work, and I want to say what Ricky said last night, the emails you guys send, the encouraging things, just really tremendous, and I'm I'm super thankful to be a part of it. The second thing I want to say is that this is a really ugly slide that I just couldn't get away from. I was trying to decide how to background this, and I know that there are a couple of guys here today who are really kind of hypercritical on that stuff, and they're going, oh, you're burning holes in my retina, because that's the tagline at Dallin Road. But I just couldn't get away from this idea of how happy these four individuals look. I mean, this person, it looks like we're like jumping off a trampoline, but there's no trampoline. It's kind of cool. This is Johnny wear long sleeve even in the summer. This guy's out having a great time when in like a lightning storm. And this fellow's climbing an invisible wall trying to catch a bird. I couldn't get away from it. For one reason, because I have four things to show you and there's four categories, blah, 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 preacher talk. But also, you know, this weekend is about these laws that cannot be broken. These absolute musts in your life, like fleeing immorality, or bearing good fruit, or preparing to die. And the other guys did a nice job of sort of getting you to see this, but I'm here to tell you that you can get kind of caught up in God said this and I might do it, and I must do it, that you forget that, you know, as the prayer, brother, was it Dane who led the prayer, Brother Dane? Great words in his prayer. We get to celebrate all this. To do what God said and to bear good fruit and to prepare to get to see Him soon and to stay away from these immoral behaviors that hurt us, that's a great thing. And it's wonderful to rejoice in those things. And so this just kind of sets the stage. And I'm about to dim the background in a minute, so these guys are going to go away for a little while. But I just want you to understand that you can smile about this. You can praise God through this. It is a blessed life to serve Jesus. And that's what all these lessons kind of come together to show us, His laws. The third and final thing I wanted to say, I received this note from Mark Roberts before I got up here. It said, "You are no Ricky Jenkins. Keep it short." So, let's get to it. Four things to show you. Ecclesiastes chapter 11. How do I cope with all of the vast uncertainties of trying to live on this earth with all of the different things that are happening around us? And we see it in the news. We see it around us every day. Here's the first observation. Number one, try this. Cast your bread on the waters. This is found in verse 1 of chapter 11. I love this phrase. This has sort of become a daily life approach to cast your bread on the waters. Now, I want us to kind of see what's going on there. So here's what I'm going to do. I'll be reading the first six verses. And in order to get a better grasp on how this works, I want you to be looking for another phrase in these six verses. This phrase occurs four times. See if you can identify what it is. Verse 1 of Ecclesiastes 11. Cast your bread on the surface of the waters, for you will find it after many days. Divide your portion to seven or even to eight, for you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth. If the clouds are full, they pour out rain upon the earth. And whether a tree falls toward south or toward north, wherever the tree falls, there it lies. He who watches the wind will not sow, and he who looks at the clouds will not reap. Just as you do not know the path of the wind and how bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman, so you do not know the activity of God who makes all things. Sow your seed in the morning. Do not be idle in the evening, for you do not know whether morning or evening sowing will succeed, or whether both of them alike will be good. What phrase occurred four times there? You do not know. You can fill this building to the top with the things that you do not know. You do not know what's going on in other people's heads, and you never will. You do not know what will happen tomorrow. You do not know what's happening outside of this building. If there's one thing that all these really sobering truths of Ecclesiastes teach us, it's that we have no control and we don't know. And to note specifically the four things that he says here in verse 2, you don't know. Things may go terribly. Whatever you try to do, it just may come to nothing. But you don't know that. You don't know if it'll work or not. Verse 5, you don't know if it's going to be rainy or sunny or what will happen in nature. These things are out of our control. You do not know, verse 5, most importantly, what God is doing. You don't know what God is doing. We try to learn what God is doing, and we learn a few things about what God is doing. And our 2020 hindsight has us using the word providence a lot when we kind of look back and see what God is doing. But the truth is, we don't know all of that. Verse 6, you don't know whether what you try will come out great or whether it won't come out at all. You don't know. You know what we're doing? We're walking around living life looking through a straw. You ever tried that? You should just take a day and put on some straw glasses. And you got these two little straws and they come together for one little dot and you just see how far you get. All you know is one little dot. You don't know what's going on behind you. You don't know what's happening around you. You can't see anything but one small spot. And that's scary to try to, I don't know, drive something. Or walk. Or have a conversation. That's our whole life, isn't it? Now, here's what happens to a lot of people. When they start seeing how kind of unfair things are and how they don't always work out, and you realize how out of control it is and how little you do control it and how little you know, it paralyzes people. They don't try anything. They become pessimistic and negative and closed in and ultimately unproductive, and that's a huge problem in the kingdom of Jesus. You know what this means? You don't know. That's true. So try things. Be optimistic. Try new things. Give it a go. If it's good and it's good to God and it stands a chance to help other people, you don't even have to know if it will help other people. Just try it. Try it with big things. Try it with little things. I'll go ahead and get my D. Bowman quote in. Be wise small. Every little thing, just try something along the way. That's the idea of what he's talking about here in this text. Here's what I think is happening with the imagery. Cast your bread on the waters. It's like a farmer who goes out to his field and he has this bag of grain that he wants to sow. But it's been a really wet year. It's rained like almost every day. And he's getting to the very end of sowing season. And he realizes, if I don't take this out of my pocket and sow it in this field today, sowing season will be over and I'll have nothing for my family to eat. But if it rains one more time and I put this out, then the river will overflow and it'll all wash away anyway. Can I just ask you guys, what do you think he should do? You leave it here, you're definitely going to starve. Now, you throw it out there and it rains, guess what? It's gone. And you starve anyway. And that kind of stuff happens. So why not throw it out there? Why not try some things? Why not be bold and courageous and do the things? And obviously, and we'll see all this in a minute, but obviously this is subject to pleasing God, but that's sort of what I'm talking about. You know, contextually, some have suggested, and by the way, here's verse 4, the guy who just watches, waits on everything to just fit in place, and it never does. Verse 6 is his advice, sow your seed in the morning, and do not be idle in the evening, for you do not know. One of the applications I've often read about this text has to do with just being nice to other people. Like giving your bread to others, and you don't know if it'll change their life or not, but it sure seems like the right thing to do in the moment. Don't be paralyzed by this judgmental attitude of not thinking it's going to work out. I saw a video earlier this year, I think it was made in Japan. This young guy gets up for work every day, and on his way to work, if there's rainwater falling from the drain, he moves this little plant over so he can get water. You guys seen this video? And he's crossing the street just at about the time that this sweet lady is moving her food cart across, so he always kind of helps her get her food cart across the curb. And then at lunch, there's this stray dog that always comes to his outdoor table, and he takes the scraps and he gives it to the dog. And then after he leaves lunch, he takes that extra change, and there's always this homeless woman and her little girl sitting there, and he gives them the money. So he goes through this routine every day, and one day he goes through the same thing, all that happens the same. And when he gets outside after lunch to give it to her, he notices that the little girl is missing. And he has this confused look over his face, and he's just about to ask the woman what happened to her daughter when he hears the daughter call, "Mommy," from down the street. And he looks, and there she is, with her backpack on, in her school uniform. He did that. He didn't know that he did that. He didn't know that that's what would happen, but he did that. He was kind to others. He took a chance. He believed the best, and it may have been nothing, but instead it became something. And I would just say before we leave this, that there's a spiritual application I'd like to make with our young people in particular. We need to step out and sow our seed in the field when it comes to spiritual choices as well. I can't tell you how many young people I've conversed with about baptism, and they know the verses just like everybody else in the room. And you say, well, why haven't you been baptized into a relationship with Jesus? And they say things like, well, I just don't know. I don't know how to work out tomorrow. I don't know what will happen when I start getting tempted when I go back to school. I don't know what my friends or family are going to say. I'm headed off to college next year. I don't know where I'm going to be working or what my schedule is going to be like. You know what? You're right about all that. You don't know. So what should you do? Don't leave the grain in the bag. Sow it into the field. Maybe it will return to you. That's our first observation. It just really makes for a nice way of living, you know, some optimism in a world that doesn't deserve it, but with people who live it anyway. Here's a second thing that goes right along with that. Carry on in chapter 11 and get down to verse 7. Cast your bread on the waters. And then in verse 7, rejoice during your childhood. Let's have some optimism and some joy. Look in verse 7. The light is pleasant, and it is good for the eyes to see the sun. Indeed, if a man shall live many years, let him rejoice in them all, and let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. Everything that is to come will be futility. Translation there, and you'll see it all in a minute. You, maybe not certainly based on the sermon we just heard, but you're probably going to get old. And when you get old, things change. I forgot to put on my glasses a minute ago. Just a bunch of fuzz out there right now. Things change. So when you are young and you feel good, and you have great energy, and God has surrounded you with good people like you have today and amazing opportunities that may or may not work out, rejoice. Verse 9, rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of your young manhood. And follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. Yet know, and he adds this small attachment, that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. Now the significance there is, take joy but not in ungodly things. And that's been well covered so far this weekend. I mean, enjoy what you have and the opportunities that are in front of you and give things a go. But make sure, of course, that those things are pleasing to God because you will face Him. Verse 10, so remove grief and anger from your heart, and put away pain from your body, or evil, verse 10. Because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. I'm saddened by the number of wonderful young people. Bright, godly, great young folks who walk around with these looks on their faces. Because I don't look like this person, or I don't have what that person has, or my opportunities are different, or things have worked out differently for me, or I saw him looking at her instead of looking at me, and they just let everything sort of crater. You know what? I can't stand here and tell you, if you tough it out, all that's going to work out. Eventually, he's going to look at you, and eventually it's all going to work. I don't know. Solomon didn't know, and you don't know. But I know this. Those same young people have so many things going for them. Beautiful in just the way God made them to be beautiful. With opportunities and friendships and things happening in their lives. Here's what I want to encourage our young people to do. You can always, every day you get out of bed, you can make a list of things that make you unhappy. And let me tell you about life on earth. There will always be a list you can make. I don't care where you live or how old you are. You can make that list, and that can dictate your behavior and your attitude all day long. But I want to encourage our young people to make the list that makes the difference. What is happening in your life right now that is truly great? That you can smile about and rejoice in and thank God for? Let me show you something interesting. Go back to chapter 2. You know, as I mentioned in the intro, all the way back through this section of the first 10 chapters, there's all this downer material about things that happen and don't happen. But something interesting that he sort of weaves in the entire letter is, so what? Be happy anyway. I want to show that to you. I'm in chapter 2, and maybe I'm working my way down chapter 2, and I get to verse 23, and it says, because all his days his task is painful and grievous, even at night his mind does not rest, this too is vanity. And he's talking about workers. You go and you get a job and you don't make enough money and your back hurts and it's not what you thought it would be. There is nothing better then for a man to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. This also I have seen, that it is from the hand of God. For who can eat and who can have enjoyment without Him? That's a great thought we'll say for a few minutes from now. For to a person who is good in his sight, and he has given wisdom and knowledge and joy, while to the sinner he has given the task of gathering and collecting, so that he may give to the one who is good in God's sight. This too is vanity and striving after wind. And that verse is just saying, you know, it's all topsy-turvy on how it all works out. But rejoice that you got a job. That you have somewhere that you can work, that you can provide for everything that we look at and say, I don't like what's happening there. I guarantee you, you put some eyes of optimism and thankfulness on it, you'll find something to thank God for. A little further along, how about chapter 3? In chapter 3, in verse 2, this was mentioned in the lecture a moment ago, there's a time to give birth and a time to die. Verse 3, a time to kill and a time to heal. And I wish I knew when those times were, don't you? You do not know. But here's what I do know. Verse 12, I know that there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all of his labor, it is the gift of God. How long is your lifetime going to be? Rejoice in it. Do good. Chapter 5. Look in chapter 5 and verses 16 and 17. Chapter 5, verse 16, this also is a grievous evil. Exactly as a man is born, thus will he die. So what is the advantage to him who toils for the wind? Throughout his life he also eats in darkness with great vexation, sickness, and anger. Boy, that's really a downer. Verse 18, here is what I have seen to be good and fitting, to eat, to drink, and enjoy oneself in all one's labors in which he toils under the sun during the few years of his life which God has given him, for this is his reward. I want to see more smiling faces. We haven't even mentioned the fact that if you're a Christian, you are preserved, your soul is preserved by the risen and ruling Savior. We're not even mentioning that to this point in this study. Think about the things that God has done that is good. So our first two observations are just sort of like a way to live every day. You know, approach it knowing that there's all these things you can't control and the outcomes aren't guaranteed, but I can try things if I think they might help people. And I can always find blessings in what God has done for me. Now, if you followed along so far, go back to chapter 11 and be ready to work into chapter 12. You might think, well, those are great, Chris. You know, I could probably give that a try. And everybody can stand to be a little bit more upbeat. But that really doesn't change anything. I mean, you've established that life is a zero, you know? It has no real meaning. So whether I'm smiling or frowning, what difference does it make? Whether I try new things and this great crop grows, or I don't try anything and I sit and play video games all day, what does it really matter? Well, I'll tell you one thing. It just does. That's the first thing I'll tell you. Getting out there and hoping the best and smiling a lot and finding joy, it just does. And it helps with evangelism, too, and bringing other people to Jesus. But if you come to this point, you might be thinking, I need a little more than this. If you're going to give me purpose in a life like this, well, let me tell you what Solomon has done. By the time we get to chapter 12, verse 1, he has perfectly conditioned us to crave for something that we're missing, to yearn for something that this life cannot provide, that no amount of smiles and giggles will ever make live securely in my heart. Before we read chapter 12, I want you to see that he already hinted at it back in chapter 3. Would you look at chapter 3 again and verse 11? He has made everything appropriate in its time. Now notice this, chapter 3, verse 11. He has also set eternity in their heart, yet so that man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. There's more stuff you don't know. You don't know what God is doing. You don't know what it's all going to look like other than what Scripture tells you. But I know this. God has put eternity in me. God has placed in me a hope that goes beyond this life. And that's where we find ourselves in chapter 12, please, in the first several verses. I'm in chapter 12, and I'd like to read maybe the first 8 verses or so. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth. I found this to be an interesting phrase. How would a young person remember God? I mean, they're young, right? So it's not like you have this long memory bank to draw from. But the idea here is find God. Young people, find God. Identify His closeness. become comfortable with the idea that life on this earth is unfair and uncertain and unpredictable, but God. But there is a Creator. But there is an Overseer. But I live in the palm of His almighty hand. Now, notice with me this read. I'm in Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 1. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come. You guys know what that is? The evil days? I'm not going to have them raise their hand if they know what that is, but you would see some older looking hands going into the air. The evil days will come. What does that mean? When the years draw near, when I will say I have no delight in them. Well, tell me more about these evil days, said no one ever, but he tells you anyway. Verse 2, before the sun and the light and the moons and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain. One day you could see, the next day you can't see anything. Your vision slowly demise. Verse 3, in the day that the watchmen of the house tremble and mighty men stoop and grinding ones stand idle because they are few and those who look through windows grow dim. You start getting shorter. Did you know that? I didn't know that. I always thought that maybe some of my grandparents were just always kind of short. They were tall like you. But life takes a toll on the body, the vision, and they begin to stoop. Verse 4, the doors on the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low. What was that? And one will arise at the sound of the bird, and all the daughters of song will sing softly. You can't hear well anymore. That's kind of cool at times. But for the most part, it's not. Your hearing goes down. Verse 5, no more roller coasters. Men are afraid of high places and the terrors on the road. You start to have equilibrium problems. Verses 6 and 7, even if you get a long life from God. Verse 7, the dust will return to the earth as it was and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Verse 8, vanity of vanities. We saw that at the beginning, says the preacher. All is vanities. But you guys, you don't have to deal with any of that yet. Use your youthful energy. Use your incredible abilities. Use all that God has given you in your youth and find Him. Seek for Him. How many young people, high school, college, marriage, job, not seeking God, but one day they will. Let me tell you about one day. Your issues start to mound up. You thought you had issues. Life starts to get really, really, for kids, complicated. And then you won't be able to find that opportunity as easily to seek God. Find God now. With your eyes, how many of you see really, really? How many 20/20s? Don't raise your hand. I won't like you. Can I advise you to do something? If there are no clouds in the sky tonight, will you find your stars? I found mine. My stars are Orion's Belt. Anybody ever seen in the sky Orion's Belt? It's three stars. They're not in perfect alignment, but they're very, very bright. And the middle one's just slightly off like that. But there are three stars that make up the constellation Orion. You can only see it during certain times of the year at night. Like right now, it's not one of those times. But I like Orion's Belt, and I look at it. And does anybody have the Sky Guide app? You need the Sky Guide app. Write that down along with all the verses that you're getting today. Sky Guide. You look up there at Orion's Belt and you click on those stars and you learn some really cool things. Did you know that the middle star in Orion's Belt, that middle one, is the size of 375,000 suns? Pause for dramatic effect. And those three stars are hundreds of light years away from one another. And they constantly line up as Orion's Belt. Find God now. Find His glory, His presence, His design, and His majesty. And while you have a nice young mind that can absorb and remember things well, research truths about God. Go listen to a Dr. Buddy Payne lecture and actually understand some of that stuff because you're in school and there's math and all that relating together. Some of us have been out of school for a while, just going to take doctor's word for it. But you still got those educational wheels turning. Use this time and go sit at that man's feet. If you get the chance, maybe read some book on understanding apocalyptic literature, if you can find anything on the topic. Mark Roberts wrote a book on that. Use your youth to seek Him. And later, when all those faculties begin to change and dim and let you down, you won't need to wonder where God is. He's been with you the whole time. Look in chapter 9, please, and in verse 1. In chapter 9 and verse 1. For I have taken all this to my heart and explain it, that righteous men, wise men, and their deeds are in the hand of God. Man does not know whether it will be love or hatred. Anything awaits him. Now remember, he can't change all the facts. He can't say, well, it's always going to work out on this earth, and because you're a Christian, everything's going to be better for you. There are a lot of great things about that. But he said, I can tell you this. You live in the palm of your Creator God, and He will never leave you. He's shown off His glory in the stars and in the majesty of what is around you. Remember God in the days of your youth. And then, as we conclude today, this leads us to our PowerPoint that I was supposed to cover. We'll spend, ironically, the least amount of time on this now because it should become obvious to us. I'm in chapter 12, Ecclesiastes chapter 12, and we're looking at verses 9 through 14. So when you've said it all, the highs and the lows, the things you can count on and the things that you can't, when all has been recorded, fear God and keep His commandments. Let's read this section. I'm in Ecclesiastes 12. I'll just begin in verse 9. In addition to being a wise man, the preacher also taught the people knowledge, and he pondered, searched out, and arranged many proverbs. The preacher sought to find delightful words and to write words of truth correctly. The words of wise men are like goads, and the masters of these collections are like well-driven nails. They are given by one shepherd. But beyond this, verse 12, my son, be warned, the writings of many books is endless, and excessive devotion to books is wearying to the body. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God and keep His commandments. Why? I'm not going to give you some sermon on that. It's right there. Why? One, because that is something to which every man must answer. This applies to every human being. It applies to the Christian. It applies to the atheist. The creationist, the evolutionist, the American, someone from any other country in this world, everyone is responsible to fear God and to keep His commandments. For, verse 14, God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. You will pass from this life, and you will answer to God for your choices. Look, we can read books, we can talk about it, we can debate, join some of those nice Facebook feeds where everybody gets fair say and they fight all the time. You can go as far as you want in your own mind. And when you're done, God is still God. We must still revere Him. And His way is the only way to live. Do you believe that? You know, when you look at the word fear, sometimes you think dread and terror. And some have suggested that here that's what he's saying. You should be just absolutely in terror of this idea of facing the Creator God in the judgment. But that's not the way I see this. I think this idea of fearing God is more the idea of just being absolutely awestruck about who He is. You know, He's the opposite of everything here, right? Life is uncertain. God is absolute. Life is unjust. God is righteousness. Life may fail you. God will never fail you. People may desert you. God is always here. I am in awe of the ever-present nature and closeness of God. Just one passage that we're going to leave Ecclesiastes for as we prepare to wrap up this study, and that's a psalm. I want you to see the usage of this word fear in another way, in a couple of the Psalms. So if I'm in Psalm 65, let me read a couple of Psalm 65 verses, a couple of Psalm 66 verses. But Psalm 65, it talks about His glory and His power. Verse 5, by awesome deeds You answer us in righteousness, O God of our salvation, You who are the trust of all the ends of the earth and of the farthest sea. You see that idea of by awesome deeds? That's our same word as fear. Verse 8, they who dwell in the ends of the earth stand in awe of your signs. That's fear. You make the dawn and sunsets shout for joy. And then Psalm 66 and verse 3, say to God, here it is, say to God, how awesome are your works. Because of the greatness of your power, your enemies will give feigned obedience to you. Verse 5, come and see the works of God who is awesome in his deeds toward the sons of men. I think that's the idea as he wraps all this up. If there's some other way to live your life, some more valuable way, some secret, Solomon would have found it. He would have bought it. He would have owned it. He said, I tried everything. The only thing that matters is being absolutely awestruck by the presence of your Creator and the guarantees of eternity. You know, real quickly, as you go back through Ecclesiastes, I'll show you a couple of references. He's been talking about this all along as well. Go back to chapter 3. If you're in Ecclesiastes and you're in chapter 3, you have all this listing, verses 1 through 8, about a time for this and a time for that, and you don't know anything about those times. But when you get to verse 11 again, he has made everything appropriate in its time. He has also set eternity in their hearts, yet so that man will not find out the works which God has done from the beginning to the end. Verse 14. I know that everything God does will remain forever. There is nothing to add to it. There is nothing to take away from it. For God has so worked that men should revere Him. Everything God does stands. Everything God promises comes to pass. I can build a life on the promises of God. I fear Him. Chapter 5. Chapter 5 talks about all the things we say and think and what we want to do. And he warns us a little bit in verse 6. In chapter 5 and verse 6, do not let your speech cause you to sin, and do not say in the presence of the messenger of God that it was a mistake. Why should God be angry on account of your voice? So there's these people just talking. You know, you ever known that guy? He's just talking. Thinks he knows everything, has the answer to everything, just he's mad, he's talking, he's going 100 to nothing. Verse 7, for in many dreams and in many words there is emptiness. Rather, fear God. Stop talking. Be quiet. Fear God. You can reason through this by your experiences. You believe it by His glory and by His power. And then in chapter 8, please, in chapter 8, verses 10 through 12, same idea. But listen to this idea of how far committed we should be to this principle. Verse 10, so then I have seen the wicked buried, those who used to go in and out from the holy place, and they are soon forgotten in the city where thus they did. This too is futility. You live, you die, it's over. Because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed quickly, therefore the hearts of the sons of men among them are given fully to do evil. That's something I told you about earlier. On this planet, sometimes the bad guy wins, and sometimes the good guy gets forgotten. Now notice this. Although a sinner does evil 100 times and may lengthen his life, still I know that it will be well for those who fear God and fear Him openly. Do you believe that? Verse 13, it will not be well for the evil man, and he will not lengthen his days like a shadow because he does not fear God. That's not a guarantee, but in terms of practical wisdom, you want to live your best life now, you fear the great God of heaven and do it His way. So as we conclude, I want you to look at all four of these things in reverse order. A lot of things I can't promise you about what's going to happen in your future. I pray it all works out and you get the girl, guys. I see you looking at me, Red. You get the girl. And you ace the test, and you get the job, and your health is great, and everybody just loves you everywhere you go. Good luck with that. But it doesn't really matter. Not if you understand the words of the wise man. Let's work our way backwards. Number one, revere the glory of God and do it His way. Fuel your will to do so by finding God and seeing His presence and feeling His closeness all the time. And then be happy about it. Sing about it and talk about it and smile about it and make that list every day of what is good because God has given it to you. And then when you leave this room, you reach in that bag and you go out with optimism and you try some things. Help some people. Speak up for some good things. Spread the love of Jesus into the hearts of men. If you're looking at this list and you just can't get there, you just can't put all this together, some obstacle exists in your heart, maybe you still have the seed in the bag and you just haven't been able to channel this concept of God and do it, let me just say that the end of this letter cannot be changed. Every one of us will stand in judgment, and every one of us will answer for what we've sown and what we've chosen not to sow. If it's your turn, your chance, your moment,